White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 322.
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. And by people like you, the Auburn family, and the AU Wishbone family this holiday season via Patreon.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, we've taken time out from our crazy, hectic holiday schedules to try to get a show in here this afternoon. This tells you all you need to know about the holidays for me. I have no idea what day of the week this is. It's Thursday. Okay, who knew? I didn't know. This is Thursday, coming up on New Year's, and so lots of crazy, hectic stuff going on around my house. I'm sure yours, too. In fact, you're going to be watching the Virginia Tech Bowl later, right?
Yep. UVA and Navy are playing as we speak, and Virginia Tech is playing in a few hours, so we're excited about both those games.
Yeah, you're going to see that. I'm going to make sure I get to check out the Virginia Tech game. Yeah, both the Virginias are playing. That's right. Well, we're going to do just kind of an informal show here and just catch up for our listeners as we come up on the big Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl on the 1st, which will be Monday, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that'll be quite the football day. I think there's one other game going on besides ours before the playoffs start, if I remember correctly. I feel like our game is earlier, maybe, and then there's another game, maybe another SEC game.
Yes, there is.
And then the playoffs, the one with Alabama is second, so I guess the one with Georgia is first. And
Michigan, South Carolina is on at the same time as our game.
Yeah.
And then Notre Dame, LSU is on at the same time as our game also.
They all three at the same time?
Well, it's like 12:31.
Oh, that's so terrible. So basically nobody's going to be watching our game.
I'll be watching our game. Well, I mean Michigan, South Carolina is a terrible game. I don't know what to watch that.
Didn't they just play each other a couple of years ago?
In a bowl? Yes. That's weird. Yes.
Okay. Well, we just recently, relatively speaking, played Central Florida for a homecoming, so... You know, but I'm actually pretty excited about that game now because of the idea that their offense is so good and their defense is, I wouldn't say so bad, but suspect. I did, as you suggested, I believe it was, I went and watched the South Florida, Central Florida game on YouTube. And for folks listening, I recommend that you watch the Central Florida, South Florida game from this year. For a couple of reasons. I mean, you can get a look at what Central Florida is like against a halfway decent team, South Florida. It's a game that goes in it. Well, I won't spoil it too much, but I guess it already happened.
It was entertaining.
It's a very close game. And also, if there's like a 20-minute version and there's like an hour version and then like the full version on YouTube. So you can pick, you know, how much the details. Like, I started watching the shorter version. And then I realized that Central Florida does kind of a hurry-up offense, and by skipping between plays in that short version, I was not getting a true sense of what their offense was like. So I turned it off, and I watched the full version where they cut out most of the commercials. And that way you can actually see the between plays and get a sense of, you know, how much time they're taking between snaps and all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of nice that those options are out there if you're interested. I also watched the South Florida bowl game, and South Florida is a very interesting team. They gave Central Florida a run for their money, and I forgot who they played in their bowl.
Texas Tech.
That was a heck of a game too. That was fun. In fact, Texas Tech led the whole game, or no, South Florida. One of them led the whole game, And so if you watch that little percentage likelihood to win graph, it was like the same team, the same team, the same team, the same team. And then like late in the fourth quarter, it zips down to like 80% for the other team and then zips back up and then zips back down. And I can't even remember. Didn't South Florida end up winning the game? I can't even remember now.
But South Florida won the game at the end. But at the very end, yes.
It zigzagged up and down because at the very end, the lead kept changing after Texas Tech led the whole game. So that was pretty entertaining. So anyway, there's that. We're just going to do a quick informal show, just kind of catching up on things. We'll preview, I guess, Central Florida a little bit. But other news first. What of note is going on in Auburn news? Like, for example, I've been hearing all kind of weird rumors about Cameron Petway and Atlanta and suspension and all this, that, and the other. What do you know about that?
I know that Cameron Petway is not playing in the Chick-fil-A Bowl.
Right.
And that Cameron Petway did not make the trip to Atlanta with the rest of the team. So he is not part of the travel party that is taking in the bowl festivities. What I had heard kind of heading into bowl season, you know, we had discussed the potential that he might play in the Alabama game or in the SEC title game, and he didn't. And at the time, there was a rumor that it was more than an injury thing, that he was back in the doghouse for something. And that, to me, is apparently the case with this. I think it's very clear that he is definitely in the doghouse again. He was suspended for the first game of the season, and this is another occurrence of that. So to me, it makes me think that we've seen the last of Petway. I don't understand. It's a problem for him because I think he had such a terrible year that I don't know if he's draftable for the NFL.
I know it.
So in the sense of making money, he'd probably be better off trying to come back and have a big year. But I think he and Auburn are probably reaching the point where they want to part ways. So maybe a thing where he transfers, goes to a smaller school and has a big year and then tries to get the NFL, or just tries to go. So. But anyhow, it's regardless, he's not going to play in the bowl game, but the news is that Carry On is going to play, that he looks healthy. He's participating in practice and stuff today. Auburn's practicing at Georgia Tech this morning. So, it's sad, frustrating about Petway. Cause like you said, we never got to see him together the way we wanted, but it is what it is at this point.
Well, let me ask you this then. Here's just a thought. The one thing I heard was he's serving a 6-game suspension.
I don't believe that.
Well, let me just run this by you. If he was serving a 6-game suspension, what if Gus's first penalty is like a 1 or 2-game suspension? His second strike penalty is a 6-game suspension, okay? Could it be that whatever they all did that got 3 players suspended at the beginning of the season, Sean White did a relapse of earlier and would have basically just missed the end of the season, and so he said, all right, I'll just walk away then because I'm going to have to miss the whole season anyway. Whereas Petway may be thinking of coming back next year, would stay on the team and just take the 6-game suspension wrapped over into next year and then go from there.
I get it, but I don't think it's all suspensions. I think Petway was genuinely hurt after the Arkansas game.
Oh, I do too. I agree with that, yeah.
So I don't think it was a thing like they're disguising the suspension with the injury talk. And I think Sean White needed to focus more on football, and he didn't want to do that. So, I think he probably was going to be suspended again. And so it was kind of a mutual parting of the ways there. Right. So,
Well, that's just me trying to read between the lines the idea that maybe Petway does want to come back, and so he would take the suspension in order to have one more year to come back and try to get into the NFL.
He might, but there's a lot of other good running backs on the roster, and there's no guarantee that he's going to get 20 carries a game if he does come back.
That's true, especially being in the doghouse so much. You can't.
That's right.
I mean, he's not reliable in terms of being able to play. You know, that's not good. So.
No.
Oh boy! Well,
other news. You know, we're still with the worry about players going to the NFL draft. Haven't heard any. The only news we have heard is good news that Dontavius Russell is definitely staying.
Right, that's good.
But other than that, we don't know anything. So the deadline is like January 11th, something like that, 15th.
Well, in other news, we did have the signing day, the early signing period, the 72 hours or whatever, and we got, what, 10 of the 15 that we had committed?
No, we signed 15 of the 25.
Okay, 15 of the 20 that we had committed. We had five that I think that chose not to sign yet. And then we have space for five more beyond that, something like that.
Yeah. So we had a really good early signing day. No big drama, no big surprises. You know, there's the 20th, 21st, 22nd of December. And the big takeaways were, you know, we signed Joey Gatewood. Your guy, we've discussed a lot on this podcast. And the other big signing, you know, really at the running backs, I mean, Asa Martin and Sean Shivers are the two big running backs. And Martin, you know, really turned into a, you know, kind of a running back that everybody in the country wanted his senior year. So that was big to keep him.
Yeah, he really, I mean, he's not, none of them are five stars, but there's some very high four stars if you can go there, right? I mean, Asa Martin seemed like he was well on the way to being in demand by everybody.
He was. Regardless of stars, at the end of it, everybody, all the teams that need big, talented running backs wanted him, and that's pretty much everybody. So he could have gone anywhere he wanted to. And Shivers is a guy, you know, who is very much like not as small as Ontario McCabe, but that kind of speed, like real elite track, you know, home run hitter kind of speed at a running back. And a guy, not the kind of running back that we've had recently. So a guy that I think it can bring back the McCabe, Corey Grant at their peak role in kind of the speed back guy.
So. Yeah,
I'm excited. I'm excited about both of those, and I'm excited about Gatewood. I mean, I feel, you know, we over the last couple of years we've kind of talked about the dregs of the quarterback position and where it was a year ago, for example, and now we're heading into a situation in the spring with, you know, Jared Stidham,
Malik Willis,
and Malik Willis and Joey Gatewood.
Not bad.
Not bad.
And,
so we're,
and on the horizon is maybe Bo Nix, depending on what happens.
Absolutely. Who's everybody in the country is going to want, but we certainly have the upper leg on. So, no, it's a great position to be in. And you have to, you know, really give credit to Gus and Chip Lindsey for kind of cleaning out the system at that position and bringing in a bunch of new guys that have, guys with, you know, really good skill sets and high ceilings. So I feel good. I mean, the rest of the signing class was really good. No big shocks or surprises. We do need to sign a couple, you know, we signed a couple of good defensive backs, but we need a couple more. That's a position we're going to have a turnover and maybe, you know, another offensive tackle or offensive lineman for sure. So.
Right. Well, I mean, it's amazing how the positions all seem to be getting deeper the last, you know, year or so. We were so worried, like you say, about a year ago we were so concerned about the quarterback situation, and now we're going to have, you know, the newcomer of the year quarterback and a backup quarterback who looks like the second coming of Nick Marshall, and then a guy who they're trying really hard not to say looks like a smaller version of Cam Newton, and then, you know, Pat Nix's son, who's apparently even better than Pat Nix was. Who, you know, think about Patrick Nix as a quarterback. I mean, I don't know how much his son is like him, but he was, I mean, he was tough. He was smart and he was tough. He wasn't a great runner or anything, really, but he was fairly accurate and he was smart and he was tough. Would you agree with that assessment?
100%. And his son is supposed to have a great release and be able to read the field, read the defense really well and make quick decisions. So, I mean, that's huge.
Yeah. I think of Patrick Nix as being Stan White's backup for 2 years and then being the 90, what was it, 94, 95 starter.
Yeah.
And he really did well, you know. Of course, it didn't hurt to have Steven Davis to hand the ball to, but he could throw it all over the place, threw it to Frank Sanders a good bit. And so that was good. Including, you know, the famous the end of the Iron Bowl in 93 and the end of the Florida game in 94 are two of Patrick Nix's all-time highlights, I guess. So.
No, but his son could very well end up being like the number one quarterback recruit in the whole country.
Man. So
there's going to be a lot of teams after it.
So our quarterback situation, at least for right now, is feeling pretty good. The running back situation too, because we got these two guys coming in. We got the guys we brought in earlier this year. All we're really going to lose is maybe Petway, maybe Kerryon, which is a lot to lose. But my gosh, I mean, we're stocking the cabinet behind them. It feels like.
Yes. No, we really are. We're building the pipeline. The situation where, Stidham could potentially stay two more years.
Yeah.
And then he could leave, and you could have a situation where you could have those three guys, with Nix as a freshman signee, competing for the starting job.
Yeah, so. not a bad situation.
Nope.
Not bad. It's miles beyond when we had, what we had two or three years ago when we had, Jeremy not doing well, Sean getting hurt, and then the guy with no elbow.
And John Franklin III, yes.
And John Franklin III. Lord, we've come a long way. I'm trying to think what's changed during that time. I'm not sure, John. I don't know. I'm not saying anything. It just seems like something maybe has changed, that we're doing so much better in the quarterback area now. But I don't know. I don't know what it is. What other news is there going on right now before we dig into Central Florida a little bit? Well, we've already talked about Central Florida some in our last episode, but...
I mean, that's really it. The regular signing period is February 1st, and we'll do a whole breakdown of the signing class after that day and talk about who we liked. But like we talked about this other signees, this is going to be a recency thing. People are not going to appreciate these guys because they signed and we're chasing after them.
They're old news, John.
Don't assume that just because there's still some guy available that he's better than the guys we already signed. So.
Yeah, it's the old deal where, like, we could have 20 guys sign, four-star guys, and then there's, like, as signing day approaches, there's, like, this one 3-4-star guy, and he ends up choosing, Clemson or something, and we're like, oh, the signing class is ruined. We didn't get that one guy we wanted. No, look what we've already got, You're exactly right, that we focus on what we haven't got and what's still out there and don't really appreciate what's signed, sealed, and delivered. So be happy, right? That's the message. We're in good
shape. Absolutely. Be very happy. The signing, early signing day went very well, and Auburn's in good shape.
Some programs didn't like it too much, but it seemed like it worked out pretty well for Auburn, and the Auburn coaches were pretty happy with it.
It did. If the guys say they're committed, they should go ahead and sign. There's a couple. Now, if the school is worried that the kid isn't going to qualify, then they shouldn't hand him the letter at that point. But other than that, if you really want the guy and he's committed, give him the paper and make him sign.
It looked like there were just a couple of really the ones that had said they were 100% committed to us that still didn't sign. And we know what the deal is with him. There's like a Jabooner, like a defensive lineman, a linebacker.
The rumor is that he's going to sign. That, some of these guys, part of it is, this is really stupid, but the early signing period happened. Everybody was out of school, high school, out of college and stuff.
Right.
And some of those guys want the show.
Yeah.
They want the big high school auditorium full of people while they do the hat try-on game thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think, the Bruce Feldman tweeted a thing that there are actually players who signed, but then they asked the teams not to tell anybody. So they are actually – there are players in this country right now who – signed letters of intent who people don't know about it, and the other teams might still be trying to recruit them.
Just so they can put on the different hats at their auditorium?
Once school gets back into session or that day in February, they can create some drama, some attention for themselves. I think so, yeah.
Well, I think we found a bug then in the system, which is that next year they need to do it before school's let out. Doesn't that make a little bit of sense?
I guess, but... It's a then teams are in high school playoffs and coaches don't want that. And it's a tough window to fit into before the holidays.
That's true. That's a good point. Oh well.
I mean, part of the thing with the Richard Jibner, I think honestly, like he wasn't genuinely ready to do it. Like he didn't have all the family members ready to go to line up to.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Well, we'll get it done. All right. So let's see. Central Florida. What have we not talked about Central Florida? What have we learned that we didn't know? What have we learned that we didn't know about Central Florida when last we spoke. I mean, we know they got a really good offense. We know their defense is decent but suspect at times. I mean, they gave up hundreds of yards their last two or three games when they played even teams that were halfway decent. But they're undefeated.
They've done some trash talking.
They have done some. It looked to me like they've got a good quarterback. They got a couple of decent receivers. They have an offense that lets them maximize the offensive line they have, like maybe quick passes and stuff. They just did a lot of sort of short, intermediate passes. I don't remember them lining up and just smashing away with a running back or two. It seems like that would stand out in my memory. I just watched it about a week or two ago, and I just don't remember them having like a power running game. It seems to me like they were just a kind of a hurry up, short pass, dink and dunk, zip down the field, try to make people miss and create a big play on the ground with a short pass kind of offense. Does that kind of match up to your view, or am I off base?
No, you're there. I mean, again, Frost was the coordinator for the Marcus Mariota offense at Oregon. Right. So it's a lot like that. I mean, it's the Oregon offense, but more passing and less running. But still, they run a lot of the same stuff that Oregon did, a lot of the quick outside stuff, or, you know, little options. They do some option kind of stuff and some quick pitch stuff to the running backs. The same kind of stuff that Oregon did in the later years. But you're right, there's a lot more passing, and the quarterback is really good at it. He moves very well. He keeps the ball some, but also he throws well on the run, and they roll him out and move him around to throw the ball a lot.
I'm going to assume that they do not possess an upper half of the SEC offensive line. And therefore,
100% correct.
And therefore, I'm thinking they probably use a lot of their mobility and motion and that kind of thing with the quarterback and quick passes to try to compensate for that. So I'll ask you then, should we be concerned that our defensive line could be negated by those tactics, or will we be able to get pressure on that quarterback?
I think the 2010 game against Oregon is a good indication here. I think our defensive line can have an impact. They can, you know, disrupt, blow up the plays before they get started and mess up the timing. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest thing with our defensive line against their offensive line is, you know, contain the quarterback. Don't give him lanes to get into. Be under control when you rush. And then the biggest key for the defense as a whole is just tackling. There's going to be the way this offense works, there's going to be a lot, like you said, of guys in space with the ball, one-on-one against one Auburn defender, and we have to make the tackle. There's not going to be a lot of, like, pushing us out of the way. They're going to spread us out and isolate one guy on one defender with the ball, and the defender needs to make the tackle. And if we make – and this has been a really good tackling defense. If we make the tackles, we'll be fine. So that's a big thing.
It seems to me that this is a game that if Carlton Davis is healthy, he could make a big difference in.
Absolutely, 100%.
Yeah, yeah. And having a lot of depth, like at the linebacking spots, as well as on the line.
Yes, you're right. Because they go so fast, we can't – I mean, it's like playing Auburn. You can't substitute during the series a lot.
Right.
So we're going to have to go a whole series with the same defensive line and linebackers in the game. And so we're going to see a lot of, like, the whole second-team defensive line in the game for a series. Because you're not going to be able to run them in and off after a play. And Central Florida is going to try and go boom, 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 boom down the field. So I think there's going to be some series as the game goes along where they bring in the whole, you know, second-string linebackers, defensive line, to give the first-string guys a break. And the other side of that, because they want to go so fast, I mean, maybe this is a game where Auburn takes a little more time running its offense.
Yeah.
And tries to, you know, wear down their defense and take time off the clock and rest our defense.
I still think it's funny that they created the slogan Auburn Fast right about the same time we quit going fast. You know, it's really like sort of Auburn medium slow. And so we've given up every off season, every spring, going into the A-Day, going into the fall practice, we always hear the same thing. It's, we're going to get back to the hurry up. We're going to get back to going fast. And that lasts about 10 minutes, and then we're right back to just normal. I mean, we're not like a wishbone team. We're not running the clock down to 2 seconds and snapping the ball every time. which is the football equivalent of pass, pass, pass in basketball when they pass, 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 pass and shoot with 2 seconds on the shot clock. But because nobody wants to see that. But because it usually, you know, usually, tell me if you agree, usually when a team either in basketball or football deliberately takes their time down to the last few seconds in either sport, it is either a tacit or outright admission that you have a deficiency and you're trying to cover it up by just retaining possession. Not advancing either the score or the ball down the field, depending on which sport. You're just trying to keep the other team from doing it, and you're trying to just retain possession to keep the game closer artificially. Is that, I mean, that's how I've always seen slowdown tactics, right? What are your thoughts?
It's fair. I mean, I think if you're a team that's really efficient, but you're not explosive, and you're playing a more explosive team,
yeah,
then it makes some sense to me. Yeah. You want to limit the number of possessions that each team gets. And so therefore you bleed the clock a little bit. We may be in a situation, I mean, listen, we've talked a lot about the defense against their offense. The Central Florida's offense is really, really, really good. I mean, you know, after Oklahoma, are probably the best offense in the country this year. So they are going to move the ball on Auburn and they're going to score points. So I don't want anybody to like panic or freak out if you see them moving the ball up and down the field at times during this game, because their offense is really, really good. So the other side of it is Auburn has to be prepared to score some points. We have to come in. We have to come into this game, you know, not thinking field goals. We got to think. We got to score 30 points in this game.
Right.
So you can't come out and just try and, you know, run up the middle, and we got to attack. We got to, you know, we don't want to get into a track meet with them, but we also, like, we got to show that we can put some points up on the board too. We got to let Stidham open up the offense a little bit and throw the ball down the field some.
The all-time great example of that always comes to my mind is Tuberville against South Carolina and Spurrier in 06, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, that was the famous game where Auburn came out down a touchdown to start the second half. And we had the ball the entire third quarter.
Yes.
At the beginning of the third, when we got the ball to start the second half, we were down a touchdown. And when South Carolina finally got their own possession, they were down a touchdown. Because we went on like an 8-minute drive, scored a touchdown, did an onside kick, went on a 7-minute drive, scored a touchdown, and then it was the fourth quarter. If you don't know about that, that one's worth going looking for on YouTube, folks. Is go look up the 2006 Auburn South Carolina game between Tuberville and Spurrier. Tuberville shows you how to milk a clock, maintain possession, and keep the other team from ever getting near the ball. That was so fun. And the weird thing is that South Carolina had the ball almost every play of the fourth quarter, except for the very beginning of it, maybe one series. So it was a really weird game. That always just makes me think of that. I know that our listeners...
It was a fun game.
I know our listeners are sort of connoisseurs of these, you know, wacky games from Auburn's past. So I like to point them out when I think of them that fit. So all right, what do we know about their defense specifically, right? I mean, you say we're going to have to keep the hammer down, we've got to maintain possession, but also try to score, not just mess around. What should we be concerned about on Central Florida's defense? I'm going to say they probably don't have an SEC upper echelon defensive line, so it's not going to be like trying to run against Clemson. Should we be able to – but they're probably fast, right? They tell us they're fast.
They're fast, but also, I mean, I would say their defense is like Ole Miss's defense.
Okay.
I mean, it's Florida. There's a lot of talented players there. They have a linebacker that's really good you can hear about. They have a – you know, their defensive line is solid. Again, it's not upper echelon, but it's pretty good. They're better against the pass, I think. I mean, especially because they play a lot of teams that want to spread the field and throw the ball. But their pass defense is pretty good. They have good, you know, some good coverage guys. But they're not great against the run. So I think Auburn's going to be able to run the ball against them and have big success doing that. And that's going to open up, you know, the whole offense once we get that going. I think our offensive line could push their defensive line around, and I think, you know, we can break some big plays open against them.
How many yards will Auburn rush for in this game?
Oh, I don't. 175.
And who will be the leading rusher?
Kerryon Johnson. He'll have 110.
Cam Martin, is he going to have some yards?
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's going to play. I think he's going to have yards. He's, you know, it's a bowl game, and we're trying to get him ready for next year. So maybe he gets, you know, like 6 carries for 40 yards or something.
I'd like to see an entire series where Devin Barrett and Malik Miller get legitimate carries.
Yes.
And not like in the fourth quarter if we're up miraculously by 21 or something. I mean, like, if they're on the team, apparently, and playing football with the rest of the team, I want them to play. I want to see them do something. You know, it's one thing if, you know, well, you don't want to start them if Kerryon's healthy. Well, sure, of course, because he can do more. He's older and got more experience, and, you know, he's had years to beef up and all that, and we get all that. But I just want to see our other players get some meaningful touches.
And it's also like, if it's going to be a higher pace game,
yeah,
where like both teams run 75, 80 plays or whatever, then, you know what, Kerryon to carry it 40 times or whatever. No. So 25 is plenty.
Yeah.
And anything beyond that needs to be divided up among everybody else.
Yeah, I agree. Here's
a question for you for this bowl game.
Yes.
How motivated do you think Auburn is in this game?
Well, I wouldn't have said they were super motivated between the fact that it's the game that it is and it's not the game that it's not, plus the fact that, you know, we haven't done great in bowl games the last few years. But on the other hand, everything I've heard from Gus, and take that with a big grain of salt, of course, but everything I've heard from Gus lately seems to me to indicate that the seniors on this team are really taking this game seriously, and they've really kind of motivated themselves and are trying to motivate the rest of the team. That's the impression I've been getting.
That's the same thing I've heard too, is that they are, you know, they want to end the season on a positive note and build momentum for the future for the program, and that they don't want to go out with the last, you know, the taste in their mouth of the SEC title game. They want to go out with a win. And so I think that's, you're right, there's a lot of really good leadership on this team. We saw it throughout the year. And I think they're going to have the team ready to play on January 1st.
Now, I'm sure Central Florida is motivated too. They want to be undefeated. They want to be able to say, you know, hey, this team and this team played in the playoff, but we were undefeated. We were 13-0.
But they're in a situation where their coach left.
Right.
The whole coaching staff left. And so, you know, how many hours are those coaches putting in versus recruiting for Nebraska or doing stuff for Nebraska?
It blows my mind that they're even coaching at all. I don't know. I guess every situation is different. You know, in some situations, the head coach won't coach. They'll have somebody be an interim coach, maybe, even if they know the whole staff is leaving or something. But it's kind of unusual, isn't it, for the whole staff to be leaving to another program together, and yet they stay behind during recruiting season and everything just to coach in a bowl game? It's just an odd, I don't know. I mean, if this was like for the national championship, maybe I could see it, but it just seems odd.
It is odd, but it's also, I think, you know, because Nebraska is not in a bowl game, it's good PR for them. This thing is, I mean, this is going to be Auburn versus Central Florida, but it's going to be a big PR commercial for Nebraska if Central Florida does anything well, like schematically or whatever. So.
Yeah, I guess it is kind of a win-win for everybody, isn't it? I didn't think about that. If Nebraska was in a bowl game, would these guys all be up coaching the Nebraska bowl game?
Probably not.
Huh. Isn't that weird? It's just odd. It's just a strange situation. Well, I tell you what. In that situation, I kind of give a bonus point of stability to us. We definitely have the stability check mark. You know, like
100%.
Yeah, if you're going down the list of comparing the two strengths, the strengths of each side against each other, we get the check mark for stability. Our coach just got a huge, you know, raise and new contract. Theirs is leaving the whole region of the country with his whole staff. It couldn't get much less stable, you know, relatively speaking there. So Anything else about Central Florida and the sugar and the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl?
Nothing I think of. I mean, I think Auburn's going to come out and play well. I think defensively, our defensive line is going to disrupt their offense and cause them problems. And I think we're going to, you know, the healthy Kerryon Johnson, we're going to go back to being very successful on offense.
Yeah, if he it is kind of as goes Kerryon, so goes the team, I'm afraid. And then hopefully he's improved. At least he's had some time to kind of get better. So let me quickly do our Patreon thing. You know, if you want to help our show stay on the air. John, I did just use a fraction of our November Patreon money to help out our facilities situation. I was running a computer that was a couple of years old with old hard drives that I was getting a little nervous about external for keeping our media, our backup podcast episodes and our recording and everything. So I went and got us a new hard drive that's got more capacity. So your help for the show is paying off, folks, in material ways. I should write everybody's name in Sharpie on this hard drive, because this hard drive exists now thanks to Patreon to hold all of our shows and our upcoming videos that we do and everything. It should be a big help. So that is awesome and very, very cool. It's one thing that you have allowed us to do. And I got a really good deal on it, too. So let me thank our patrons who have done stuff like, who allow us to do stuff like that. That'd be, of course, Nicholas Dottrell, Cottrell Josephine, Christopher Burleson, Neil Dyer, Steve Trawick, Phil Amthor of WeHaveDonuts.com, Richard Stevens, David Evers, Tom Anderson, Timothy, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Steve Harlan, Andrew Barber, Jared Albrecht, Bill Matthews, Rich Reimer, John McCune, Catherine England, Will Summerford, David Simpson, Josh Teal, Mike Finley, Randall Walker, C.T. Wayne, Earl Ricks, Dave Powell, Michael Kirshner, Tony Perry, George Gaston, Logan Chilton, Alex Nguyen, Chris Thrash, Clay Henson, Mick Vigicana, J.W. Rice, Wardam Wade, Dave Medinas, Nicholas Craig, Kenneth Brent Rains, John Stubbs, James Taylor, Mark Squire, Joey Miller, Matthew Wagstaff, Russell Milling, and our one-time and anonymous donors. Last time I checked, and I'm going to refresh it right now, we were sitting at 49 patrons.
That's awesome.
49. And I have two things to say. Yeah, we still are. Two things to say. One is that is awesome, and we appreciate every one of you 49. The other thing is, you reckon we can get over 50 before the new year?
I think so.
I think it just one more gets us to 50. So if you want to do that, for as little as a dollar a month, though, we appreciate more. Support the show. Just show your support. Get your name called out on the air. Help us to move toward doing our live broadcast. I can't wait next season if we get to do that. Hopefully we will maintain this level and we'll be able to do it. Just go to patreon.com and just search Plexico. Couldn't be easier. Or, of course, you can always just go to www.plexico.net. Plexico.net has links to everything, including John. I just added a link on .net. Plexico.net. I keep saying one .com. It's not .com, it's .net. I just added a new link to our Bond show. We now have three regular podcasts, and all three have a player on Plexico.net. And that is, of course, this show, the White Rocket Show, which is like our pop culture, a little bit of everything potpourri show. And that is On Her Majesty's Secret Podcast, which now has its own feed. So all three of them are linked right there, as well as the Patreon and other stuff. All right. There are other SEC bowl games going on over the next few days. In fact, we're very backloaded, aren't we? I was just looking that now don't spoil it for me because I've recorded it, but I haven't seen it yet. But Missouri, I believe, yesterday was the first SEC team to finally play a bowl game against Texas. And I'm going to go watch that one later this afternoon, kind of fast forward through it. But I think that now that the gates have opened, the floodgates have opened, and the SEC has like multiple games almost every day until the whole thing is over. So what all do we know is going on?
All right, I'm going to give you some games, and you tell me who you think, all right?
Yep.
So tomorrow's games, today is Thursday the 20th, tomorrow's Friday the 29th. We have Wake Forest, Texas A&M, and the Belk Bowl.
If Texas A&M can't beat Wake Forest in the Belk Bowl, they should give up. Who's coaching? Who's coaching it? Jimbo?
I think some of the existing Sumlin staff are coaching it, but I'm not sure.
That's another one of those weird situations we're talking about.
Again, Wake Forest, big edge in stability there.
Yeah, that's true.
Then tomorrow afternoon, Kentucky Northwestern.
See, I know nothing about Northwestern, so I don't. And Kentucky's been so Jekyll and Hyde. We've talked up Kentucky, and they've fallen on their faces, and then we kind of get down on them. They go out and look pretty decent. What do you think about Kentucky?
I think they're decent for an SEC East team.
It's a big caveat.
That's right. And then Saturday, the 30th, Louisville, Mississippi State. Again, Mississippi State without a coach. I think the interim coaches are coaching.
See, I would have taken Mississippi State to edge Louisville with Mullen, but without him, I'm thinking more Louisville.
Yeah. And then on Monday, again, Michigan, Florida. I don't care. But you got to think Michigan.
Wait, who?
Michigan versus South Carolina. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah,
I think must champ though. My brain.
That's a tough one to pick to me because Michigan hasn't been quite as good as people thought they would be. South Carolina has been kind of up and down. That's a tough one. I guess I'm going to say I'll go with South Carolina for the SEC, but I don't have high confidence there.
And then Notre Dame, LSU.
LSU.
And the news come out today that LSU is getting rid of offensive coordinator Matt Canada and may go to Ensminger.
What?
Yes.
What? Are they bringing back Hugh Nall to help him?
I hope so. Auburn fans would dance in the streets.
Hold on a minute. They're getting rid of Matt Canada and putting Ensminger in charge of the offense. Here's some funeral music that to make us all feel sad about that terrible situation.
It's very soft.
What in the world? Isn't he considered one of the best offensive coordinators? Did he just clash with Orgeron? And I think I'd fire Orgeron and keep Canada.
I mean, Canada, you know, was a highly regarded offensive coordinator, but there was that Troy game middle of the year when they lost and it came out that Orgeron had been telling him not to run his stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that created some, you know, split that couldn't be healed, whatever. Again, it doesn't matter. The problem with them is always the same. They don't have a quarterback that's any good. Right. But Canada's a good offensive coordinator. I don't know. If they went out and hired some other top offensive coordinator, but if they went out and hired some I formation guy, the LSU fans are going to throw themselves off buildings.
That's what I was going to say. Is it's like there's something in the water in Baton Rouge as you go down there going, we're going to run the spread. We're going to be hurry up. This is going to be a high-powered, high-octane offense. And you get down there and you drink about two glasses of water, or in Orgeron's cases, two cases of Red Bull, and suddenly it's like, we need to get the ball to the fullback more. three things happen when you pass, and two of them are bad. We need to give the ball up the middle to the fullback more. It's like they turn into – it was even true of Les Miles. You turn into Pat Dye circa 1981 as soon as you get on that campus. It's so weird. I don't understand it. That's just strange.
It's a weird situation. I don't understand that one at all.
I wonder where Canada's going to end up going.
I don't know, but I think he could get a job tomorrow. So.
Oh, exactly. I'm just saying. I mean, that's – dang, that's.
I mean, Tennessee, some of these other schools that don't, you know, have an offensive coordinator, he could get a job there. So, and then we got the two playoff games.
Yeah, backdoor Bama playing Clemson. Because isn't it funny that we complain about Auburn playing Clemson, and yet suddenly the last 3 years it's Alabama playing them every year too. So, it really is like Clemson joined the SEC West lately. I wish they could play. I wish they had to play LSU and Mississippi State and Texas A&M every year too. but then they wouldn't be in the dang playoffs every year either if they had to do that. But or it'd be a lot harder. Let's see. So Alabama versus Clemson. The thing that worries me is that when Clemson really wants to play, they're a hoss, but they let down. You know. But on the other hand, Alabama looked pretty mediocre against Auburn. So. This is another one of those games that I feel like these are two potentially very good teams, but I just can't get a beat on them because they've had moments when they look very meh.
Well, I think Clemson is one of those teams that like knows they're a playoff kind of caliber team and kind of cruises through the season and then puts it in a gear.
Yeah.
And I think they put it in a gear at the end of the season. They annihilated Miami in the title SEC
That's
title
true.
Game.
That's
and
true.
I think they're going to peak and play their best football in the next game or two. So I think, I mean, Alabama had real problems with Auburn's defensive line and running the ball on Auburn, and I think Clemson's defensive line is going to take the game over and not let Alabama run the ball, and that's going to be the difference. Like, Hurts can't beat them throwing the ball. They're not going to be able to run the ball, and I think Clemson's offense is a shell of what it was last year, but it's still plenty good enough. I think they could score, points and beat Alabama, kind of similar to the score that Auburn beat them, like 27-14, something like that.
Yeah. By the way, before we talk about Georgia and Oklahoma, I heard something to the effect that Coach Snyder might actually be retiring.
I have to say, well, this is a good point to talk about because you're talking about Alabama. I hope this happens because I'm going to tell you there's an important fact here. If Snyder retires, Nick Saban will be the oldest coach in major college football in Power Five. Wow. And he's older than any NFL coach. And we should tweet that every day for the next year if Snyder retires, because it's the truth. And Alabama, he dyes his hair and he's in good shape and stuff. So people want to pretend he's a lot younger than he is. But Herm Edwards came back to coach Arizona State. He'd been out of football for 8 or 9 years and he is 3 or 4 years younger than Nick Saban.
Wow. Well, if Coach Snyder does retire, we need to have him on the show one more time. We haven't had him on in a while, and we get people that miss him. We need to have him on
Absolutely.
One more time just to kind of talk about what he's going to do in his retirement in his second career now after he gets out of football. Okay, so Georgia-Oklahoma. Man, that's going to be a fun game. I mean, the Alabama-Clemson to me is just going to be agony watching because you got to cheer for a team you hate against a team you hate even worse. But Georgia-Oklahoma, I mean – we know that Oklahoma can put some points on the board. Can Oklahoma's defense keep them in the game against Georgia?
Oklahoma has the ceiling to beat Georgia and beat them going away. I mean, they went into Ohio State and beat the crud out of that team, and that's a team with similar talent level to Georgia.
Yeah.
So they can play that way. Their defense can play at that level. I think the biggest thing to me is just – I think Oklahoma's offense has gotten to a point where it's close to unstoppable. And Georgia has, again, Georgia, who the best passing team they saw was like Missouri. Okay, that's it. They haven't seen anything like Oklahoma's offense. And, the Oklahoma quarterback's really good. Mayfield, when stuff breaks down, he does the Johnny Manziel schoolyard kind of thing and runs around and buys time in the pocket and guys get open. And he completes plays, and it's really hard to prepare for that. And I think they have enough talent around him that I think they're going to move the ball and score points on Georgia. Now, can they stop Georgia? I think they can stop them enough. I really do. So
that's going to be an interesting game. Again, I'm not going to really, quote-unquote, enjoy watching either of those games, but I'm going to watch them just out of interest to see if the country doesn't. Do we want Alabama, Georgia?
Me?
Does anybody?
I'm sure there's somebody that does because they think those are the teams that should have been in the SEC title game, and then we beat
right.
both of them. So
right.
I hope they both lose, and it's Clemson, Oklahoma.
Yeah, I do too. That way, the worst possible outcome of the national championship game would just be Clemson again, which wouldn't be great, but it would be infinitely better than Georgia or Alabama winning.
Oh, 1,000 times better.
Has Kirby Smart got the second-year coach reverse jinx going for him where he might win? I mean, possibly, right?
He might, but again, I think the two best things in college football this year are Clemson's defensive line and Oklahoma's passing game. I think those are the two things that I've seen that are the most unstoppable, and I think you're going to see that in the playoff.
Yeah. All right. All right. Well, any last thoughts before we wrap up for today?
No, we'll do a big post bowl game mailbag wrap up of the season and stuff. So think about your questions and thoughts of that. And at that point, we'll break down who won our bowl pick'em, which is going well.
Yeah, I was happy to see that Jared is no longer winning it. Because only for one reason, which is we would never hear the end of it. But he's not far off the pace, though. He's only like in third place, I believe, right? And
he's beating the crud out of both of us.
Oh, so. Lord, I'm near the bottom. I did notice how you said in the description of it that the most important thing wasn't whether you win or lose, but just that you beat me. You're telling everybody that, so that was good. Yeah, I just all the ones I thought were guaranteed locks have turned out to be upsets, at least in my mind. So that didn't work out at all. So, yeah, I'm near the bottom. But who's currently our leader? Do you remember?
The pick's name says Buck Sweep. I'm not sure who that is, but Bryce is second.
Bryce, okay.
So.
All right, it's changed since the last time I looked at it yesterday, since there have been a couple of games last night. So, all right, well, I'm going to wrap up and go watch the fast forward through the Missouri game. But, yeah, folks, if you're listening, please be thinking of your questions to send in for the show that John was talking about, and we'll get that up and after pretty soon after the after January 1st. So, all right, well, I guess our time is up, and we thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, Van.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
So what becomes of
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.